Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies, listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers, and finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 40 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. For any first-time listeners, let me give you a quick overview of the format of this podcast. This podcast is a series. First in the series is an interview with an expert. Last week, I interviewed Steve Preston, author of Portfolio Careers, How to Work for Passion, Pleasure, and Profit. Second in the series is an interview with someone who has repurposed their career. In today's episode, I am going to talk about my transition into teaching high school math in an inner city high school, and more importantly, why I left. There are some very important lessons to be learned. The third in the series is a topic I choose. This month, I'll be reading a chapter from my latest book, Repurpose Your Career. The fourth in the series is a mailbag episode where I answer your questions. That should give you a good idea of the sequence of episodes, and I encourage you to go back through the archives to find episodes that might inspire you to repurpose your career. Repurpose Your Career, a practical guide for the second half of life, is now available on Amazon.com in both paperback and Kindle ebook formats. I have started recording the audio version of this book with a planned release of September of 2017. Next week, you will get a preview chapter, What is Your Personal Operating System? In today's episode, I'll be discussing how I made my transition from high-tech training for an advanced tech startup to teaching high school math in an inner-city high school, and why I left a year and a half later. Hope you enjoy this episode. This is my story of going from high-tech to teaching high school math, and only to return 18 months later. I was very successful, but I seduced myself to believe I was something I was not. The story actually begins back in 1990, when I was working for IBM, and I moved into a technology transfer group that was there to prepare the field to sell a brand new leading edge product. And I was on a technology transfer team that we were there to develop curriculum and then deliver it to well over 1,000 salespeople and sales engineers, sales support. And I spent 3 years doing that. I was really good at it. I spent much of the rest of the decade presenting, teaching, being what I like to refer to a geek that could speak. I had transformed myself from being an introvert to appearing to be an extrovert. In the late 1990s, IBM was starting to have layoffs, was not such a safe place anymore, and after they screwed me on my pension, I left in January of 2000 to go back to being a trainer. And I went to work for Agera, a network processor startup, where I was to develop curriculum, have a small team. We were going to teach leading-edge router and telecommunications equipment companies how to use our chip, a network processor chip, which today is in many of the LTE wireless base stations. It's now owned by Intel, the chipset is. Working with my one employee, we developed very, very sophisticated curriculum, and we typically taught that class twice a month. The class was 2.5 days, so about 20 hours of teaching in lab. So if I taught it by myself, I was, maybe 40 hours a month. If I co-taught it, which was very common, 20 hours a month. So I wasn't on stage all that much, even when I was a presenter for IBM. I spent far more time preparing than I did actually delivering. In fact, I consider myself a much better curriculum developer than I am a presenter, although I'm a one heck of a good presenter. Then came 9/11. Our class volume declined. We ended up traveling a lot more because when the dot-com boom hit, the only people developing new telecommunications devices were largely the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Koreans. So I was flying to China pretty regularly, flying to Japan, Korea. On July 11th of 2002, I was out with my bicycle club riding a very, very difficult, twisty-turny route where I came down a hill at about 25 miles an hour and turned into a blind turn, only to find that there was a Toyota Corolla coming the other direction, the road was cambered the wrong way, and we hit head-on, totaled a 96 Toyota Corolla with my body and my bicycle. Right, a bicycle, not a motorbike. I was taken to the trauma center. Actually, I was taken to the emergency room. My buddy who was in front of me thought a gun had gone off. I spent 5 days in the trauma center. All things considered, I wasn't badly hurt. I tore up a knee. I had a major laceration across my shin where my knee hit the headlight. I broke the hip. I dislocated a shoulder, broke a bunch of ribs, broke the clavicle, had imprints of the pads of the helmet in my head. But I had no internal injuries and no brain injuries I'm willing to admit to. And they had me walking on crutches in 3 days. They threw three titanium screws in my hip and had me up and walking, admittedly on crutches. I was back on a bike in 10 weeks, and I was flying back to China in 4 months. By the way, I was in my mid-40s at this time. When I flew back to China, I flew right smack into the middle of the SARS epidemic, bird flu. We didn't know at the time, and that is what I like to refer to as one of my what-the-hell-am-I-doing moments. Because at those speeds, you have about a 10% survival rate. I had no business living through that. This was now late 2002. Agira, the startup I was working for, had been acquired by Lucent, then spun out as Agira Systems. My stock options were worthless, but I had received six-figure retention bonuses, which allowed me to pay off the house, finish paying off my son's college education. You know what? We were debt-free, and I was in my mid-40s, and we were an empty nester. So I decided, let's go teach high school math. That is where I suffered from MSU. I made stuff up. It is now early 2003. We are going through the drip, drip, drip of layoffs. Agira Systems lays off one or two a month out of our 100-plus team in Austin. And I'm on the team within my group selecting who gets to be laid off. Ooh, I did not like that at all. So I was pursuing teacher certifications, and there are basically two choices. I could go back to Texas State, the local teacher college, get 16 hours of education credits, do student teaching, and I could then apply for my teacher certification. Or I could go get an alternative certification. And the only body that gave at that time were the regional service centers around the state of Texas. We didn't have Teach for America. I decided to go after the alternative teacher certification because it was faster. Boy, was that a mistake. So I missed every sign that this program was not for me. First, when I filled out the application, the first question was, what was your college GPA? I don't know. That was the mid-70s. Here we are in 2003. How many hours of math did I have? Because I was applying for a math teaching certificate. Oh, I don't know. A lot. I have a computer science degree from the Electrical Engineering Department of Northwestern. A lot. But who cares? I took number theory and Turing machines and differential equations 25 years ago. Okay. But then that's where I really hit the sign that I didn't know what I was looking at. And that is, what were the names and telephone numbers of all my previous supervisors? What? My first boss in Chicago was Bob. He was in his late 40s, a heavy smoker. He easily could be dead, or he's in a nursing home. That's where I just ignored the fact that what they really were looking for were young kids fresh out of college who had gotten degrees in something other than teaching. Well, they looked at my transcripts and they said, you didn't take any English in college. Yes, I managed to finagle my way out of that. They made me take the THEA test, which is the equivalent of the TAX test, or Texas Assessment of Knowledge and Skills, which is what you have to take in order to graduate, in English. The reading test was easy. The writing, I actually had to write a 600-word composition in pencil with pencil and paper. My first job out of college was developing word processors for IBM. I hadn't written anything with pencil and paper in 25 years. I started doing it and I realized, oh, I have to outline this. That's when I started realizing education was really outmoded. As I was going through this, I finally decided, you know what? I'm just going to volunteer for a layoff. The culture within the company had gone down significantly. And I volunteered for a layoff in October of 2003. I got the equivalent of about 5 months severance, which is not bad for working for a company for 4 years. And then I got a letter in December of that year from Region 13 that said, you are not accepted. We're not going to give you a reason, and don't call us. Wow, was I ticked off. Now what the heck do I do? I've already laid myself off. I'm without a job. Financially, we're fine. But it's like, geez. And that's when I discovered that Austin Community College had their first ever alternative certification program. They were launching it during the winter. And so I applied, and I was accepted. Little did I know that they had no idea how to teach adults. It was a bunch of teachers who knew how to teach kids, but didn't how to teach adults, didn't know the difference between education and training. They spent much of the spring of 2003 teaching us how to be teachers. But you know what? I need help teaching Algebra 1 and 2, which is what I was going to teach. Well, that was going to come in the summer. So all through that winter and spring, I was consulting back to my old company, Gear Systems, doing classes period about once a month for them. And then I told them, come the summer, that was it, because I was going to be in a summer-long program where they were going to help us prepare to take the certification exams for our areas of expertise. The problem was, the teacher who was supposed to do that, the professor who actually developed the curriculum, had to go back and get more master's degree credits. ACC was having problems keeping their certification. They basically said, do it on your own. We then asked for a refund. Really ticked them off. I passed the exams, and that's when I realized the schools really didn't want us, because everyone who was in my certification class who was male and over 40, we couldn't get interviews. No one would talk to us. No one, which I later determined they didn't want us because us guys over 40, we don't do what we're told. And I got lots of stories about that. So I end up getting hired the week before school starts. As it turns out, Aikens, the school I got hired at, called a 24-year-old colleague of mine in my cohort, and she already had a job. So she called me and said, they got a job down at Aikens, which I immediately applied for. I faxed in my resume. I emailed my resume. I hand-carried my resume. Within 2 days, I had an interview, and within a day, I was hired. I'm required to take a 3 or 5 day class, new teacher orientation. Boy, was that a joke. They spent more time teaching us how to teach within the district than telling us, geez, hall passes? What should students do when they want to go to the nurse's office? I mean, Channel 1, what did you do when we did advisories? I mean, they didn't tell us anything. I didn't even have access to the attendance systems for a week, and no one told me how to use it. All the things that I needed to know, they didn't teach me. All the stuff that was kind of nice to know, they were teaching us. So I got in, I was assigned to teach 2 sections of Algebra 2 and 3 sections of Algebra 1. Therefore, I was going to be on stage roughly 5 hours a day. That's 25 hours a week. I tell you this, that's exhausting. On top of that, as a first-year school teacher, you are teaching something that you've never taught before every single day. So you're prepping. So my fall semester, I followed the typical new teacher, what you call morale. What happens is you start out in the end of August, you're all excited, and your morale kind of starts dipping in September, and you hit about rock bottom around Thanksgiving. And then you start picking back up around Christmas, and then you have Christmas off, and you get, you know, 2 or 3 weeks off during the holidays, and your morale gets better, and the spring is really, really hard after spring break because you don't get a single holiday. And the idea was, and this is where I completely misunderstood. I do not get energy by being on stage. Well, I am on stage every day and I'm doing something I've never done before. That was absolutely exhausting. Now, I slowly got into a role. I was very fortunate. I had a really, really good Algebra 1 mentor. In fact, Sarah, our lead, actually gave us lesson plans, gave all the Algebra 1 lessons plans, and we all did the lockstep with each other. That was not too bad. My Algebra 2, wow. So after about 6 or 8 weeks into my first semester, there was Jenna across the hallway. She was 27. She was in her second or third year teaching Algebra 2. And I went over to her and I said, "Can I have your lessons plans, please?" And what I did for the whole rest of the year was I stayed 2 days behind her. Every Friday, I would go pick up her next week's lesson plans. And I would, if I didn't understand something, I could go watch her. And I played little puppy dog for the whole rest of the year. Now, the other problem you have is a lot of us who go into teaching, we expect to be teaching the same kind of kids that we grew up with. No, you're going to get hired into a large urban school district with minority-majority populations, single-parent households, and poverty. Most of the people who approach me during the year and say, "I want to do what you're doing," well, they were mostly white, middle class, educated, suburban raised. They knew who their parents were. Basically, when I got into school where my classrooms were 90% Hispanic, I could count the number of white kids on one hand, and most were poor. Probably 90% of my kids were on free and reduced lunch. Oh, by the way, in my Algebra 2 classes, which was mostly juniors and seniors, 90% of my kids had probation officers. No, that does not mean they were bad kids. Lots of stories behind that. But I was dealing with an audience, a culture that I had never dealt with, and that is a culture of poverty. Well, I finished my first year exhausted. I had been managing every 3 weeks. I'd been sending an email out to about 100 people to keep them informed on what was going on. In just about every email, I wrote about Julio. Julio was my freshman gangbanger. Probably had had lead poisoning because he processed things real slowly. His mentor, who he worshipped, was his older brother, who was 23 with 3 kids and was a roofer. But Julio had one thing my other students didn't have. He had a work ethic. We would go into the computer labs twice a week, and he would work all the way to the bell. He knew how to work. So my first semester, he got a 69. I gave him a 71. Next semester, he got a 71. I gave him a 73 or 74. And I slowly edged him up. After Christmas break, things were going so well because my kids came back and they were so bored during being off on winter break that they actually behaved themselves pretty well. I didn't send an email out after my first 3 weeks. I got hate mail back. Everyone wanted to hear about Julio. Well, Julio disappeared for about 6 weeks. When he got back, it took a while for me to dig out of him. But what had happened was his grandmother had gotten ill and the family all went back to Mexico. His parents didn't really see the importance of education. And that was a real key. Now, by the way, Julio could speak good English and then go into ghetto talk. And the only words I understood was ho and mother. Everything else, I couldn't understand a word he said. This was a really, really new culture. Well, like I said, I finished that first year. I was exhausted. I had built that email, had built me a fan club because they gave me so much support. That summer, I spent all my time preparing for the next year. I had about 8 to 10 weeks of lesson plans already created. And I got in and I got going. And I had 5 sections of Algebra 2. Now, there are lots and lots of stories in here, but that second year was really sad. I had Grace, who had gotten pregnant, end up having the baby getting kicked out of the house. Grace was a really good kid. She ended up, her baby was born with spina bifida and hydrocephalus. We went and visited her down in intensive care, and she's down there all by herself. She's 17 and dealing with this. I couldn't imagine. My kids had more problems outside of school than you could ever imagine. My second year, I started going downhill fast around the October-November timeframe. I had problems once daylight savings time set in. What I'm discovering is being on just wore me out. And I didn't quite understand. I'm not an extrovert. I don't get energy from this. And that's where I kind of seduced myself, starting in the early 90s, to being, okay, I can get up there and teach. The reality is I can spend lots of hours developing curriculum, but I really have to moderate the amount of time I spend delivering it. This is a real challenge. And I had seduced myself to believe something I wasn't. So by November, early December, I turned in my resignation, said I would leave at the end of the semester. I had gotten moderately depressed, and I was really, really struggling. Now, it's rather interesting. Unlike in the corporate world, if you say, you know what, I'm leaving, I got this problem, many times folks will say, well, what can we do to get you to stay? They didn't do anything. By the way, in my first year, all my exit exams, I blew the doors off of it. My juniors passed the exit tax test, which is what they need to do to graduate. I got all but one of my juniors to pass on 2 tries. I got 90% to pass on 1 try. The average in the school was 30%. By the way, no one noticed. I got later interviewed by a University of Texas professor, asked me what I had done. Because I blew the doors off. I blew the doors off of everything. No one noticed. This is a lesson to be learned. I've even learned some things going back and reflecting back and realizing how much I had conned myself into believing I was something I was not. It took me a good 6 months after I left teaching for me to start feeling normal again. It so wore me out. So think about, how are you really different than what you think you are? As I said, I am a closet introvert. I was a very shy kid. You see me on stage, you see me in front of a class, I'm not shy. I'm recording this on July 31st. Later in the week, I'm doing a multi-generational workplace talk to the top 20 law firms in Austin, Texas. I guarantee you, I will be on for the 2 hours I will be there. I will be dialed in. I will be phenomenally good in delivering that. When I'm done, I will walk out and just almost collapse. I will be exhausted. Who I am is not what I appear. So think about that. And I hope this has been a useful episode for you. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. In 2016, I wrote a post called What Skills Will You Use in the Second Half of Life? I suggest you read that post because I discuss the skills that you want to carry forward, but more importantly, what skills do you want to leave behind? There will be a link to the post in the show notes, which can be found at careerpivot.com/episode-40. Please pick up a copy of Repurpose Your Career, a practical guide for the second half of life at Amazon.com or any of the other fine online retailers. When you complete reading the book, I would very much appreciate if you would write an honest review on Amazon.com. As I stated earlier in the podcast, I have started recording the audio version of this book. Lastly, I'm working on the Career Pivot community website. This will be a membership area of the current CareerPivot.com website, and I have an initial cohort of members helping me develop the content. Look for more on this in the coming months. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at CareerPivot.com/episode-40. Please hop over to CareerPivot.com and subscribe to get updates on this podcast and all the other happenings at Career Pivot. I publish a blog post with show notes every Tuesday morning. If you subscribe to the Career Pivot blog, you will receive the Career Pivot Insights email every Sunday, which includes a link to this podcast. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. I hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.